The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
And welcome to Autism Live. I'm Shannon Penrod, and I'm so happy and excited and grateful to be here this morning. I think those of you that watch the show regularly, and I hope you remember to join us today, because we've canceled a lot of shows recently because, man, I have struggled with health issues. If it hasn't been one thing, it's been another thing. So I just appreciate those of you who've stuck with us, and I'm excited to be here this morning to talk about this particular topic, and thrilled to be alive. You know what I'm saying? It's spring. It's officially spring today. Spring has sprung, and I'm alive, and I can breathe. And hopefully I'm not going to have a coughing fit with all of you. So, yay. And just grateful for all of you. We've gotten a lot of really wonderful emails in the last few days, and I just want you to know how much that matters to all of us here, to Dr. Grampuchet and to myself and to Chris. So thank you guys for all of your support. I hope that you will also support this particular episode, because I have a feeling that more people than I would like to admit probably need today's topic, because we're seeing so much more of this in the world. Let's say today's topic is going to be about when school says your child with ASD doesn't qualify for special education. We're going to talk about that and all the iterations that that may come up, and some strategies to help yourself and your child and to get over this hump. But it's very demoralizing. I also want to say that we are doing today's topic because we had a parent who wrote in, one of our viewers that I really, really appreciate, wrote in and said, hey, here's a topic that I would love to see you guys talk about. We ask you all the time. I want you to see. This is how it works. You ask for the topic, and then I'm happy and thrilled to talk about this. So I want to say thanks to Suze. We really appreciate. And I found out some new information in preparing for today that I'm excited to share with everybody. So we're going to get to this in just a minute. But before, let's backtrack just a little. I want to remind you guys, we are live right now on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. I know, because we haven't been live at all this week. But as I said, thank you for bearing with us. Today is Wednesday, March 20th. It is 2024. I have to think about that still. It doesn't roll trippingly off my tongue. 2024, how'd we get there? But thrilled to be here with you this morning. We are, as I said, live on all those places, and the show will be available on podcast. Everywhere you get your podcast, whatever platform you get it, free later on in the day. And our fabulous Chris Desmond is showing you some of the places on the screen where you can get it, like iHeartRadio, so many, Spotify, all the different places where you can download the show. We really want to encourage you to, wherever, however you listen to the show, to like it, share it, subscribe. All of that helps us. We are in the business here of giving you free content that we hope will provide you with information and inspiration. That's what our whole goal here is at the Autism Media Network. In order to do that, defray the cost of that, because obviously it costs for the lights and everything else, and it actually costs when you download a podcast. We have advertisers. We're always looking for more advertisers. Right now I'm looking for advertisers in the month of April, because we've got some amazing shows coming up for you guys. So if you know somebody who'd like to advertise on Autism Live, please reach out to me, Shannon, at autism-live.com. But also, when you download your podcast, you will see that we already have advertising on that, on the podcast. And we hope you'll embrace that, because that is what enables us to get that podcast to you at no cost. You know, no front in here. That's just how that works, right? So if I hope you embrace those sponsors. If it's really something that's getting in the way of your enjoyment of the podcast, there is a way that you can subscribe to the podcast and get it ad-free. You go to glow.fm/autismlive. It's $5 a month. It's even less if you buy it by the year. And in that way, you're helping us to keep the lights on and getting your content at a very low cost. And when you do that, by the way, you not only get Autism Live, but you get everything that we do on the Autism Network, including Ask Dr. Dreen. So it's kind of a, it's not a twofer, it's like a fourfer, right? So we hope that if that's your ticket, that you will find yourself going to glow.fm/autismlive. Okay, so I want to launch in because this is a lengthy topic and I want to get to it. But we're hearing from more and more people that are writing in. We are in IEP season now, from now to the end of the year, and people are telling us overwhelmingly that the school is saying that their child who has a qualifying diagnosis of ASD does not somehow miraculously qualify for special ed. And usually the thing that we're hearing is that there's no educational need. So let's launch right into this and see what we can do. And I want to start with, and we can go on to the next slide, Chris. There we go. So there's two entirely different scenarios here. And so I've tried to separate the screen here. So on the one hand is a denial of initial qualification for IEP. This is, and your child might be just starting school, or your child could have just gotten a diagnosis, and then you went to the school and you told them that you have the diagnosis and said, you know, we'd like to have an IEP. And they said, oh, well, let's do some assessments to see if they qualify, right? And then they came back to you and they said, yeah, there's no educational need, right? And I have seen that one in both those scenarios, where we've got a four-year-old who's being evaluated for kindergarten and they said no, or an eight-year-old or an 11-year-old and they said, no, your child is doing okay in school. And notice that I've got the pink boxing gloves underneath that scenario, because you're going to have to put on your pink boxing gloves and you're going to have to go to, you know, fight with them. You're going to negotiate and fight. You're going to do that. That's what the ticket is when they're denying you right from the start. Now, the other scenario is that your child already has the IEP. Your child has been in special education for however long, 6 minutes, 6 years, however long, and now they're coming back and saying to you that they would like to declassify your student from special education. There are many different steps to this. They might be coming to you and saying, well, we'd like to downgrade from the IEP to the 504, or they will always, in all cases with an IEP, be fighting to fade the services. Now, for this scenario, it's a little bit different, and I want you to keep in mind that that there's a little part of this that I want you to celebrate, right? Because let's remember, as we're talking about this, that what we all want, which is that your child makes so much progress that they don't need any more support, right? Isn't that the very definition of winning the lottery here, that your child would be able to do whatever they needed to do at school and would not actually need support? And what I find is that usually, most of the time, not all of the time, when school starts to, especially the top two, say we want to declassify them from special ed or we want to downgrade them from an IEP to a 504, it's because the progress is visible. So we want to celebrate that. We want to take a minute and go, woohoo, that's pretty good, right? But then we want to put the pink boxing gloves on and go to work, because more often than not, school jumps the gun on this. They see a little bit of progress and they go, oh, okay, we don't have to pay for that anymore. That's putting it a little bluntly, but let's say that. Because for all intents and purposes, that's the bottom line, right? Let's remember, let's all hug ourselves and remember that there are laws in place that say very specifically, and we're going to go over some of that stuff, that your child has a right to have supports that are necessary for them. We're going to go over the actual legalese of that. But that schools, that program is not fully funded. So schools are always trying to figure out, how do I pay for all the things that the law says I have to pay for? And if a kiddo is doing well, they start trying to take services away from them. So we do want to put on the box boxing gloves and go, oh no, my friends, not that quickly. But let's not forget that we're all trying to get that place anyway. We just want to slow the roll on it. So let's go ahead on to the next slide. So I want to start with a little bit of a disclaimer before we get too far into this talk that obviously I'm not a lawyer. I'm also not a certified advocate. I am your friend in the corner trying to help you parent to parent. This is a parent to parent talk to try to give you resources so that you can get the most for your child. That's really what today is about. So from the beginning, I want to give you some really good resources. If you are trying to do this on your own because you don't have a $1 million budget for lawyers, which is so many of you, I want to give you two really fabulous resources besides our show and besides the whole playlist that we have with Bonnie Yates, special education attorney, the Know Your Rights one, right? So besides that, if you haven't been to rightslaw.org, wonderful website where you can get all kinds of information. You will see that some of the information that I have, I got from them. I will tell you that in the last 8 years, used to be so much easier. You could go to .gov or .edu and you could find out all the information you needed. It's all hidden now, my friends. It's all hidden under rocks. It's so hard. I went down the rabbit hole the last couple of days trying to find stuff on .gov. It's so much easier to find it on Rights Law. Just putting that in your pocket. But I will tell you that I found this new fabulous resource that is unbelievable. It's like my head exploded. I've been talking to everybody about it for 3 days. I've got the website up on the PowerPoint. If you go to www.parentcenterhub.org, and then I've given you the specific /find-your-center/. You will find an amazing resource that it gives you all 50 states. What I found out is that under IDEA, while everything under IDEA is not funded, guess what is? Every state is required to have at least one of these parent centers that is designed to provide what? Free support for parents to work on IEP stuff and know their rights. I know. I was like, shut the front door. Where was this all this time? I've been hosting the show for I don't know how long. I didn't know about this. And you know me, I sat down. I was like, what? And I went. And when you go to the website that I just gave you, parentcenterhub.org/find-your-center, they have all the states there. You click on your state and then it lists all of these parent center hubs in your state. And I found the one, I live in a big state, so I found the one for Los Angeles and I called it, right? Because I'm like, how good is this thing? I called it and I got a voicemail and I left a message. I said, hi, you know, I'm looking for resources. I hung up the phone. I turned back to my computer and my phone is ringing. I'm not kidding you. It was that quick. I answer, and it's a person from the place that I'm calling. And it was a person talking to a person. How can I help you? She says to me. And I just was like, what? And it's free. It's free. It's free. It's free. So I know. Let's all celebrate. We need to have some confetti. I didn't know that existed. So Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Like, there we go, right? It's a wonderful thing. Now, and you can ask them questions. And guess what else they have? They have webinars and workshops, and they have trainings to help you to be better prepared for the IEP. I know, somebody get a rag. I'm sweating. It's so good. Okay, so, but the other resource that we always like to give you, you may find at any point along this way, and I want you to be honest with yourself, if you find yourself being overwhelmed, which will be most of us, right? And there's no harm, no shame. I don't want you to make yourself sick over the IEP stuff because the laws are there. I think you will prevail In almost all cases, you will prevail because you're on the right side of the law, but having to fight it your own might be too much. I know, I wish somebody had called that for me, and I didn't have the resources, the money, to be able to afford an attorney, but there are many ways, you know, to help with that. But if you find that you need more help and you need an advocate or attorney, we really recommend visiting www.copaa.org, which is the Council of Parent Attorney Advocates. I cannot personally vouch for every attorney and advocate on the list, but I think we have found overwhelmingly, you'll need to interview, you find in your area and interview, but they are usually parents who have been through it themselves, so they have a better understanding, and there isn't the usual nastiness that can happen, you know, sometimes with people in the legal profession. You know what I'm saying? These are people who understand where you're coming from. So while I can't vouch for all of them, we've had really good luck with people getting support from the people on their list. Okay, so those are our resources. Now let's launch into what else do I have for you. Okay, so the first thing that I want you to consider, if you're in either one of those categories and they've said, no, you don't qualify for an IEP, I want you to stop everything and ask yourself, what does my child need? Because school has their agenda and I want you to have your agenda. So I want you to ask, what's your gut saying? What does your child need? The question was asked of me the other day about how do you know when your child, you know, maybe they're right. I always go with the parent's gut. You know, and I want you to get as specific as possible about what do you think that your child needs? And we'll go through a list of potential things that you might come up with in a second. But I also want you to think about who are the experts on your case. If you are working, for instance, with a speech pathologist, ask them, you know, what do you think? If you're working with an OT, you can ask them. You don't have to accept these people's opinions, by the way. You still get to have your gut. But I think it's good to have, you know, people who are the experts weigh in, not just the administrator at school, right? And if you have people outside the school that are experts, like if you're working with an ABA team, ask them, what do you think? I am not saying you have to listen to everything that they say, but let's take it into consideration, right? What does the teacher say? And I would ask the teacher separately from at the IEP meeting. I would ask for a parent-teacher conference, and I would go in and say, hey, what are you seeing? What do you think my child needs? Da, 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 da. But again, and you notice I put it on there twice, what does your gut say? I even want to say to you with love and is it impunity? Is impunity the word that I want here? I love CARD. My son was treated at CARD and we had such a good time at CARD. And one of the people that I respect, put on a mountain, is a gentleman named Hank. And I remember that there was a time when Hank came and observed my child in class and said to me, I don't think your child needs the aid anymore. And I said, Hank, I love you and I respect you so much. I think you saw him on a good day. My gut says he still does need the aid. And I stand by that, right? And I still respect Hank. I listened to what he said. We eventually got rid of the aid, but not then, because mama's gut said, I don't think so. I've been there more days. I think you caught him on a good day. And I think that the teacher was trying extra because Hank was there. You know what I mean? So you ask, you take it into consideration, but you're going to go with your gut in the end. My dad taught me that. Good advice. Okay, let's go on to the next slide. Oh, and I did that pink, and so I can't read it. I'm going to need you to full screen it. So here's some potential things that you might be saying to yourself that your child might need. Your child might need help with focusing. Your child might need a behavior intervention plan because they're engaging in some kind of behavior that is making it hard for them or others around them to learn. Your child might need help with social skills. Your child might need help finding and keeping a friend. Maybe they need bathroom help. Maybe they are having academic issues and they need tutoring. Maybe they need physical assistance because they've got physical things that are going on. Perhaps they need help with resolving conflict, that they get into a little bit of a scuffle or something with somebody at school and they don't know how to resolve the conflict. Maybe they need support for sensory issues. Maybe they need communication support because they may not be able to communicate verbally, or they may not be able to completely communicate when they need help or assistance. There are lots of people who are very verbal and vocal, but cannot tell you when they need help, right? Maybe your child needs executive function support. Maybe your child needs recreational support because they're doing really well in school, but everything falls apart during lunchtime and recess time or downtime. Right? These are just some of the things that I could think of. I bet you guys could think of 35 other things. But these are some of the things that you could potentially be told that your child doesn't need special ed while your child needs these. I think it's important. Go ahead on to the next slide, Chris. I think it's important that we are thinking about these, and I'll tell you why in a second. But that's for the younger kids. When your child starts to be 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and up, they're going to need an individual transition plan, the ITP. And they have a right to that if they have an IEP. They're going to need help with job skills and support. They need help with support with housing. The ITP covers those first three things: job skills and support, support with housing, and personal life support. That is exactly what the ITP covers. By the time, and in every state, it's slightly different. In some states, they need to work on the ITP by the time they're 14. In most states, it's by the time they're 16. And I see that this is an area where schools just fall apart. They do not know what to do for this, and they gloss over it. And when a student is 14 in any state, I start saying, have we started looking at the ITP? And I hear over and over, oh, we don't have to do that until they're 16. And my reminder to everybody is, oh, no, on their 16th birthday, it needs to be in place. So why are you planning the day after they turn 16 for something that's supposed to already be there? So in every state, it needs to be in place by 16. So I like to start talking about it no later than 14 in every state, and in some states much earlier. But again, it covers job skills and support for jobs, so that when they are working, that they have support for working. It covers where they're going to live, and it covers who are going to be their support system, because it's supposed to understand that you, the parent, are not going to live forever. I know, we don't want to talk about that today. But then there are other things on this list that your child, who's when they grow up, they're going to need help with healthcare. They're going to need to have legal support and potentially much, much more. So when somebody looks at your child and says, well, I know they have a diagnosis of autism, but there's no educational need, we need to start by thinking about, wait a second, what does my child need? And get really clear about that. Go on to the next slide, Chris. Because when we know what is needed, we are much more successful at getting what is needed. So let's get clear first on what it is. And your list can be super duper long, right? Because what we're going to try to do is drown out the voice of whoever is saying there's no educational need. We're just going to megaphone them to death with the list of all the things that they do need. And again, two different categories here. So when we have a denial of eligibility, I want you to be aware, on both cases, the clock is ticking. But when you get denied for the first time for the IEP, I want you to know that the school is going to move so slow. They are going to move so slow that they're going to look like rocks, right? And you, the parent, as you're advocating for your child, you need to move fast. You need to be hitting every deadline. You need to be barraging them with emails. You need to be getting assessments done. Everything that you do, you're going to move as fast as possible. Now, on the other side, if you currently have an IEP and they're pushing for declassification, they're going to move like lightning. You are going to be shocked at how fast these people move. You're going to go, I didn't know they could move this fast. And you need to slow their roll as much as possible. You need to move like you are moving through mud, with absolutely everything. And we'll talk about why these two strategies as we go. But I just wanted to give you that heads up. This, a lot of the things we're going to argue for both of them are going to be very similar, but the way in which we argue them are the complete and total polar opposite. If you've never had the IEP, boom, you're going to hit hard and move fast. The other one, you're going to, oh, let's do a stay put and let's move as slow as possible. Okay, going on to the next slide here. Okay, so think about all the things you just made your list of, all the things that your child needs, right? Now let's think about what school offers. And I want you to see that school tries to automate their stuff, right? It's called an individual education plan or program, depending on what state you're in. It's supposed to be individualized, but school has a hard time with that because they're a machine and they like to cookie cutter and stamp things out. And so they create just categories of things that they offer. They all offer speech. Most of them offer OT, although I've noticed all of a sudden everybody's gotten stingy with the OT, which is shocking. They will offer some specialized instruction. They will offer adaptive physical education. Sometimes they will offer aids, and there's different kinds of aids, behavioral aids, medical aids, recreation aids. Sometimes they will offer special day class, but then they get into programs. And programs are supposed to be able to fit every other thing that every individual child needs, right? They will also offer resource, right? And then, you know, you tell me, what else are they offering you? But what they do on a and I used to be a school teacher. I'm not anti-school, but I will tell you, it's a machine. And the picture that I have is the square peg trying to be fit into the round hole. They are going to take your child, and they are going to try to fit your child into a program and say, look, it fits. The law says it's an individualized education plan. I'm going to tell you right now, your child is not going to fit perfectly into any plan they have. And you're going to have to constantly be pushing them to modify their plan to fit your child. And at a certain point, they go, your child doesn't even need a plan. They can swim on their own in the classroom. And as I said, almost always, they jump the gun on this a little bit. I will tell you for myself, I inherited this amazing quality problem that where my son was going to school, one of the most amazing advocates in the world, Emily Island, had come 14 years before me. And there was nothing when she came in. And Emily Island, here was her son. We've had Tom on the show before. And she was like, you know, you don't have anything in place. Here's the law. Here's what we're going to do for Tom. And they created these programs based on what Tom needed. And then they morphed them over the years. It didn't stay just the Tom program, right? But they built this whole set of programs to fill when they got a parent who knew what they were doing and had specific needs for their child, Emily Island. And then I walk in. And my child doesn't fit the Tom Island program. And I had to push and cajole and push and push and push and say, nah, my child needs this. And then I finally got them to do that. But I will tell you right now, somebody's probably dealing with my son's program and trying to push to get something else. So I think there's a lack of imagination Executing imagination takes time. And I will say that at schools, they don't always have the time. I don't want to disparage them completely. I think they mean well, but you are going to have to be the person who says, no. My square peg of a child is not going in your round hole because there are going to be gaps, and we don't want gaps. Okay, so we remember that's what they're trying to do, and now we're going to put on the boxing gloves. Go ahead, go to the next slide. Okay, so IDEA has some very specific things that it says that your child has a right to. So schools offer it. We've already said what your child needs, what school is going to offer, what is IDEA? What does the actual law say? So IDEA says that your child has the right to a free, appropriate public education. That's the FAPE, right? That they have a right to an IEP if they have a qualifying diagnosis, which if your child has a diagnosis of autism, that's a qualifying diagnosis, and they have a right to the least restrictive environment. So on this slide here, we have the actual language about what the purpose of IDEA is. And this is directly from Rights Law, that you can find it there. It says to ensure that all children with disabilities have available to them a free, appropriate public education that emphasizes special education and related services designed to meet their unique needs and prepare them for, wait for it, future education, employment, and independent living. This is where we're going to squeak a bunch of stuff in because the school is saying to you, your child has no educational need. That is why they are not qualifying for the IEP. And we're going to remind them that the IEP is for further education, employment, and independent living. So we're going to bring up a whole bunch of questions about, you know, if my child is not capable of making a friend during lunchtime, then that is not going to help them for independent living, right? We're going to make a whole bunch of cases around this. They cannot stick to this, oh, well, there's no educational need, crap. All right, keeping my blood pressure under control. Moving on to the next one. Okay, so let's talk about what qualifies your child, you know, because it says if your child has a qualifying diagnosis that, you know, then they can have the IEP. So here's the part where it gets contentious. The term child with a disability means a child with intellectual disabilities, hearing impairments, including deafness, speech or language impairments, visual impairments, including blindness, serious emotional disturbances, referred to in this chapter as emotional disturbance, orthopedic impairments, autism. Then also traumatic brain injury, other health impairments or specific learning disabilities, and who by reason thereof needs special education and related services. So, and I've given you, this is section 1401 of the Individuals with Disabilities Act. So we can certainly go in and argue, my child has a qualifying diagnosis of autism and therefore needs special education. They're saying, no, your child has autism but doesn't need special education. And my question always is, where are you seeing that You can declassify a child of having autism, but did they diagnose your child and are they taking away the diagnosis? No. And when they evaluate your child, there's a specific part of the IEP that says if they are evaluating your child to learn how to teach them, that they're not allowed to undiagnose them, that that's not legal. So you can push them on this. A lawyer's going to do this better than a parent. I'm going to give you things, but I want you to know as a parent, this is poppycock. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Okay, so we're going to start our how we dismantle their poo, right? So the first thing that we ask ourselves is how did they evaluate and ask for all of the testing reports? I want to know who evaluated the child. What tests did they use? I want to know when they did it. I want the timeline. I want to know the day and the time that they tested your child. I want to know where they tested them. Did they test them in the library? I want to know everything. And I want to see the findings. I want to see the notes. I want to see the final reports. You have a right to all of that. And you will find they don't want to give it to you because often it's a hot, hot mess. But you have a right to ask for it and keep asking for it. And the longer you keep asking for it and ask for it in writing, and the longer they take to get it to you, the more you know that it's all a steaming pile of you know what. Right? But what are we looking for? We are looking for cracks in their assumptions. Okay? And if you end up having to go with, you may find it on your own, but if you end up having to go with a lawyer, having already asked for this stuff and having it, and tell them, and I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. They've probably already given you the report, right? Hopefully. If you're at the IEP and they're saying that they want to declassify your child or that they don't want to classify them at all. But then when you ask, I'd like to see everything. I want to see, you know, where you did it, what time you did it, and I want to see the data notes. The notes. I want to see the actual notes. And they're gonna give you something that's not what you asked for. And I want you to notice it. A lot of times they think that a parent is just asking for this and won't actually look for it and won't look at it. And so they will give you something. It could be somebody else's report. I've seen that happen. They'll give you something that's incomplete. And if you need help going over it, have a friend read through it and just logic it out, right? But if you end up going with a lawyer, it's going to save you time and money that you already have this stuff, right? And it's going to help you in other ways. But let's go on to the next slide. So if you disagree with the evaluation in any way form, while you're waiting for them to get you all parts of it, and you're looking for those irregularities, because I have a little graphic picture here that somebody lighting a row of matches, because we're going to try to burn this evaluation. We're going to show that it wasn't effective, that it wasn't right, whatever. We're going to find chinks in the armor. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for irregularities and inaccuracies. And you will be surprised at how many irregularities and inaccuracies, even just like on one sheet, like really push them. I want to know what days these things were done, because they should be keeping track of that. And then you get the actual report and compare notes. There was a time when I did that they alleged that somebody was working with my child on a certain day. The report said it was a different day. And then I looked, and the day that they said that the person was there, my child wasn't even at school. And, you know, then you're done. Then you're done, and they'll listen to you and you get what you want, right? So you're looking for that kind of thing. You're just poking holes in it. They are not good at taking data. They are not good at keeping their stuff really well organized, because they're school, they're teaching. This is not what they do for a living. A lot of times you can find irregularities. But at the same time, you want to ask for an IEE. This is an individual education evaluation. You have a right to this. If you disagree with the evaluations that they do, you absolutely have a right. You need to ask for it in writing and say, we disagree, we would like an IEE. And then they will send you, first they'll try to say, well, no, you don't need one, or try to deny you that. No, I would get an advocate if they do that, because that's not appropriate. But if they do agree to it, they will send you a list of evaluators. This is wrong too. You have a right to choose the evaluator. So, and remember, if you're on the side where you're trying to speed things up, you want to do this quick, 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 quick. If you're on the side where you're trying to slow things down, you're going to take your sweet time about this, right? But either way, well, only if you have the IEP already, you're going to request a stay put during the evaluation process. And what a stay put is it says that everything that is in the current IEP is frozen in time until we resolve this. And then you will see all the time that the school tries to run down the clock for you, you're going to run down the clock for them. Which means that, you know, so we're in March now, and different states, different rules, but, you know, you're going to find out what the timeline is for your school for an IEE, and they're going to get the form to you that says, here are the evaluators, and you're going to say, I'm going to find the evaluator. Just make sure that you stay within the deadlines. If you're trying to run the clock down, you tell them on the very last day before you have to, just don't miss the deadline, right? But run the deadline. Don't be in a big hurry if you've already got the IEP. Okay, let's go on to the next slide. Okay, things that we're going to argue, and this, I didn't put this in this, but this is directly from IDEA, these two different things here. So, we're going to argue how and this is exactly language from IDEA, we're going to argue how the child's disability affects the child's involvement and progress in general education curriculum. And for preschool children, if you have a child that's under the age of 5, you get to include activities. The language is for preschool children as appropriate, how the disability affects the child's participation in appropriate activities. But I will tell you that even for the kids that are not in preschool, kindergarten and up, part of the educational curriculum is recess and lunch. That is a part of their day and a part of what they're doing. And if they're not successful during that time, we're including that in there. School's going to balk at this. They can do that, but it's included. Okay, let's continue on to the next slide. Okay, so again, let's revisit now. I put different colors, still can't see it. The things that your child might need. Remember, because now we're getting clear on looking at how is my child affected because they have this autism diagnosis. How does this affect their learning if they're having difficulty focusing? So if you have a child who's having difficulty focusing, then that's an educational deterrent, right? And that's something that we will argue. And we will say, my child has difficulty focusing, and so therefore you cannot declassify them. They need to continue their IEP. And we're going to give them lots of goals and say, we want this work done. But look at each and every one of these things now through that lens of how does that affect them in school? If they're doing any kind of challenging behavior, that definitely impedes their learning progress as well as potentially the students around them. If your child has, if in the last year they have sent a note home saying that your child engaged in a challenging behavior and they're concerned about it, they for sure should not be taking away the IEP. Let's just say that. And you should make that case to them and say, excuse me, what are we doing here, right? But social skills, if your child is deficient in social skills, that's going to affect their educational success, right? They still qualify for the IEP. Chris, can you full screen it for me again? Thank you. Finding and keeping a friend. We know that a child is more likely to be bullied if they're not able to have relationships. And if your child can't find and keep a friend, how are they going to do group projects? Thank you. If your child is not completely potty trained and doesn't need support in the bathroom, if your child does need support in the bathroom, they never should take away the IEP. If they are saying that there is no educational need, that your child would not need tutoring, but I've seen it happening that your child is behind on some things. I have unbelievably seen that your child is not completely included in regular education yet, has not proven success in regular education, and they try to pull the IEP away, and you go, what? What are you thinking? We're going to talk about that in a second. But you can ask for tutoring. If they need physical assistance, obviously, we would not take the IEP away. If your child has trouble my child had a problem with justice. If he saw that something was happening and it was unjust, he would get very upset and have a meltdown if another child was being chastised for something that they didn't do. My kid would melt down. And that was a reason to keep the IEP, right? If your child is having sensory issues, schools don't know what to do with sensory issues. And I think this one is probably the most. We have a brilliant kid who can do the educational stuff, but they're having trouble with sensory issues. And so the school says they don't need us educationally, but this affects how you take in information, and we need to re-educate them. Communication support, if your child isn't highly verbal, they should never take away the IEP. Executive functions is another one that we get these brilliant kids that can do all the work, but we're going to look at it and go, are they handing it in all on time? Are they able to, you know, meet the goals on their own? Have they already proven that? School likes to say, let's try. And we like to say, let's prove they can do it on their own before we take away the supports. And then recreational support. This is all that stuff that happens during recess. That's the really difficult stuff. But if your child is struggling with that, that does impede their educational progress. Okay, keep going. Let's keep going. Hi, Rodney. How are you? Okay, so specific examples of things that happen at school when autism is not supported. And you can say to them, you know, this is what we're afraid of seeing. And if any of these things are already in place that are the red ones, you need to lay down the law and say there is absolutely no way we are letting go of this IEP because these things are still in place, right? But I include on here challenging behavior, which could be anything. Your child is spitting, your child is, you know, hitting, kicking, you know, anything having to do with that. Not on task, you're leaving an area where they're supposed to be, all of that. Sensory issues and meltdowns, we would argue we cannot let go of the IEP. Not following directions. How does your child do when the teacher stands at the front of the room and gives a direction? Does your child have to have more than one prompt? We would never get rid of the IEP. If there's any safety issue at all, that's one in red, we would say no. No, it's not happening. And if you need to, get a lawyer. But I think when you say, no, we are not allowing you to declassify because of safety issues, and you make that argument and say, and get just really staunch with it, I think they stop. They just shut down and go, no, you're right. But how about incomplete work? If your child, and you want to have examples of work, if they're handing in work and it's not completed, it's not time to get rid of the IEP. Work not turned in at all, that's executive functions. That is not time to stop the IEP. If your child is being bullied, it is not the time to stop the IEP. If your child has been accused of bullying, not the time to stop the IEP. Elopement is one in red. If your child leaves an area where they're supposed to be and has ever done that, ever, you say, no, we're not letting go of the IEP. Refusing to go to school is a reason not to let go of the IEP. Poor grades, they should not be making the excuse that your child doesn't have an educational need if they have poor grades, but I've seen it. If they have no friends, if they don't have a social support at school, no, we don't let go of the IEP. Difficulty during recess, same thing. But if there is any violence or stress or anxiety in or around your child at school, we absolutely staunchly say no. It's unconscionable for you even to be suggesting that we let go of the IEP. I think sometimes, in some cases now, we're seeing, like, just preposterous. And when the parent goes, no, then they go, oh, all right. I don't know what that is, but it's frightening to me. So don't be afraid to be really staunch. Okay, let's move on to the next slide. So strategies to argue the denial of eligibility. So we ask for the IEE in writing. We know and watch the timeline, right? This is if you've never qualified for the IEP before. We watch the timeline and we're pushing. We choose the evaluator as quickly as we possibly can. We also consider getting a private evaluation because remember, we're trying to burn their assessment. And if you have, if the IEE comes back and says, you know, that your child needs the thing and you also got a private assessment, there's no way they can go two against one, right? It's expensive to get the private evaluation, but it's worth looking into. But you've got to be able to do it quickly, and that's a hard thing to do. But gather every expert opinion that you can that says your child still needs an IEP. I would point blank go to everybody that you know that's ever worked with your child, and especially recently, and say, would you be willing to write a support saying that this is, you know, my child still needs the IEP? If they say no, you move on, right? But some of them will do it for you. You're going to gather facts, examples, and samples of their work and argue all those things that we said that your child needs. And you're also going to argue the side of it about what could happen, which comes under the one, argue any safety issue and put it in writing. It's okay to be a little reactive here that, you know, if you put in writing and say, you know, I am asking for an IEE. I disagree with what you said. My child has a qualifying diagnosis of autism. My child has safety issues. By you denying them their legal right to an IEP, you are putting my child's safety at school into question. You are denying them their right to FAPE, right? That kind of language is very incendiary and would suggest to me if I was working at a school, oh, she's about to get a lawyer and maybe we need to look at this again, right? But that's the truth. And if you are there, you might need to get a lawyer. Depends on how, you know, how much you want your blood pressure to go up and how much time you have, right? But it might be time to bring in an advocate. But if there's any safety issue at all or any safety concern, You know, I have evoked things that have happened to other children and said, that's not happening here. You're not, your lack of concern for my child with a qualifying diagnosis is not going to be why my child is not safe at school. You know, that's hard for them to answer to, because should something happen, you know, God forbid, something happened to your child, they, you know, it'd be scorched earth, right? And because, and if you've got it in writing, whoo, that's really, really bad lawsuit for them. So we don't want that to happen. We're not letting that happen. Sometimes you need to get a little incendiary with it. Okay, move on to the next one. Strategies to argue the declassification. So we're going to slow everything down. We're going to ask for the stay put and run that clock like our life depends upon it. We're going to ask for the IE right out the gate, but we're going to know our deadlines and we're going to use them to the fullest. Don't miss a deadline, right? Because then they'll go, oh, you didn't meet the deadline. But take all of the time in the deadline and document everything. While they're doing that, you're going to start to make a laundry list and you're going to start to ask them for everything under the sun. Ask them for services. Your child's never had a recreational aid evaluation, ask for that. They've never been evaluated for APE, ask for that. You're going to ask for, you know, if you didn't have the one-on-one aid, now ask for the one-on-one aid. And they're going to be like, we're talking about taking away your classification and you're asking for a one-on-one. They're going to be confused by that. It's okay. Ask for as much as you can think of to ask. On that wish list, start asking. You know, a lot of times I say, don't ask for the sun, the moon, and the stars. No, 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 no. When they're declassifying your child, ask for everything in writing. Don't say, my child is owed this. You have to give my child what's best. No, none of that. But just say, I have a concern about this, and we have not yet had a recreational aid evaluation. They're going to go, what? It's okay. Ask for new goals. Come up with things on all that list of things that you were like, well, my child needs help with focusing. You know, have somebody help you. If you have skills, it'll do this for you. But ask somebody to help you to come up with a goal about focus and put that in there. That you know, and say, here's a goal that we want for focus. We see that you're not concerned about that, but we're concerned about that. Any safety issue in the world that you have for your child, you're going to start emailing them on a regular basis. I'm concerned about this safety issue, da-da-da-da-da-da. You're going to document everything, but especially any difficulties your child is having. You're going to notice all of the, you're going to look at every single piece of paper that they come home from school with, and anything that's irregular or that they didn't do well on, you're going to keep in one file, and you're going to put little post-it notes on it that say, here's an example of, you know, that my child needs help and support. Right? You're going to show those work samples when you eventually go in for the IEP. And you're going to argue the long game about work and independence, that this isn't just this moment in time, guys. This is, remember that quote that we had from Wright's Law earlier from IDEA? You know, my child, you're supposed to be helping my child now, but for further education and independent living and job skills. So we're not there yet. We're not there yet. You're going to keep arguing all of that stuff. And you're going to consider getting an attorney advocate. But here's the real thing here is that what you want to do, again, you're moving so slow and you're asking for the sun, the moon, and the stars because we're setting up a space in which we're going to negotiate. So let's go ahead on to the next slide here. We're going to get to negotiation in a minute. So when the district says there is no negative impact on their ability to access education, if you're watching and can see, I have a cat with a very, like, face on. So when they say there's no negative impact on their ability to access education, we're going to bring up sensory things, all the sensory things that your child is having difficulty with, which absolutely impact their access to education. We're going to bring up any anxiety that the child has. Big, big one, right? Because it's very hard to quantify anxiety. They can say, oh, there's no anxiety, and you can say there's a ton of anxiety, and they can't prove that there isn't. Any bullying that's happening, you're going to bring up. Anything where your child was ostracized, wasn't included, any of that, and any lack of participation with peers. If your child does not have a strong friend group, you're going to go in and go, excuse me, our work is not done here because my child is still struggling with X, Y, and Z. I will tell you that when school starts to move fast and say your child doesn't really need this and you come in and go, but here's what my child does need, the good educators in the room go, oh, oh, yes, your child could use help with that. And then all of a sudden, they can't help themselves. They get into problem-solving mode, and now you have an IEP goal, and they've let go of the declassification. And now you just bought yourself 4 more months, 6 more months, however much, right? So those are the things that I really encourage you to bring up when they say that. Let's go on to the next one. When the district says there's no fine motor issue, so they don't need OT, because this is the new one, and I have a snake there saying hiss. You want to bring up your child's inability to self-regulate. You want to bring up anxiety. You want to bring up sensory shutdown. And when you've observed these things in your child, and you want to bring up the potential that you see this at home, if this is true, I'm not telling you to tell anything that isn't true, but if you have a child with autism, it's more than likely true that your child, when they have sensory issues, will engage in escape-maintained behavior. Because that is the normal human thing to do. If you are sensory overloaded, you in some way escape. Now, you can escape by tuning out and focusing on something else, and we get that lack of focus. Or you can elope. Or, you know, you can create a diversion. My son used to take his pencil and throw it on the floor so he'd be crawling on the floor so that he wouldn't have to do the thing, right? There are all kinds of things that a child can do to escape sensory. Now we're wading into categories where the school doesn't have very much information. They may not actually know this, but when a child is having sensory meltdown, it is going to cause them to behave in a way that is not accessing that educationally enriched environment that they're trying to bring them. So you argue and say, I know you guys are trying to do this great educational thing. My child has sensory issues. If you don't give him OT, and if we don't start working on this kind of stuff, and if he doesn't get a break to have that sensory diet, then you are going to start to see some behaviors here. That's going to happen. And it will. So this is how you argue that. Let's go on to the next one. When the district says, let's change things, and you're in the middle of a transition. Oh my gosh. And that is exactly the reaction I want you to have, like, really? And I want you to bring up to them that best practice would be to make the transition and then evaluate. When all things are going well, and you want to say it in a nice way, not like I just did. You want to say, really? I am just shocked by that. Because things have been going so well and we've appreciated all of these things, and we're facing this ginormous transition from this to this. And so, you know, everything that I have read has said that best practice is that we would make the transition with everything that we have, make sure that everything's working after the transition, evaluate then, and then talk about fading supports. Now, hear me say this, that if you are reasonable in the IEP meeting and you say, I'm totally with you. We definitely want to fade this at some point, but not now. Not now. This doesn't seem like the right time. I think we can all agree we're facing a big transition. I think let's get him or her through the transition and then let's reevaluate. You know what happens? Then we're in October and we're not in IEP season and they forget that they were going to reevaluate and start. And then in October you say things are working so well and you give them something else to add. Listen, I, for 4 years, I promised them, no, we want to get rid of the aid, but not now, not now. Let's get him through this transition and then let's reevaluate. 4 years, I dragged that aid. You want to talk about running the clock down? 4 years, we did that. Don't be afraid to do that. Don't be afraid to say to them, hey, I'm with you on this, but this is not the moment. Clearly, best practice clearly says that, you know, when we're about to hit a transition, let's leave everything in place. I'm happy to meet with you in September and we can reevaluate then. Now you might get somebody who's, you know, going to mark it off in the calendar and go, oh, we're meeting with her on September 12th, right? But then you've got all summer to think up something new to add so that we don't lose the services. You're just going to drag it out, drag it out, drag it out until your child's actually ready. You're doing a favor to them, but they don't know it. Okay, can you full screen it for me again? No, I want to go back, but I didn't read all of the ones on that, but I'm blind. Okay, so also, if they're talking about changing things during a transition, you for sure are going to bring up anxiety. And you're going to say, best practice says, and especially considering their anxiety, I think, you know, it's not a good idea. We're not setting them up for success. We have the potential for sensory shutdown. We have the potential for escape maintained behavior. Why don't we do what's best practice? Why don't we get them transitioned with all the things we have on board, make sure that that's all working, and then we'll reevaluate. Let's see you in September, right? Isn't there an old song? Okay, now we can go on, Chris. Thank you. So when the district says, our program already has all of the things that you're asking for your children, and they're going to say this, and notice that I got a big old tiger with their mouth open and their fangs out, because this is crap. The technical educational term for this is crap. This is them trying to shove your child, that square peg, into the round hole. So we're going to bring up now that a documented diagnosis that says that this is a qualification for more than what they have in, you know, that it's an individual educational plan, right? You're going to remind them of what an IEP is and why your child it has a qualifying diagnosis for it. And this is the moment where you're going to say, I want to remind you that my child has an autism spectrum disorder diagnosis from a doctor, and it's helpful if you have the classification. At this point, I am thinking that your child is probably at a level one, at least in one of the two categories, right? But the very definition of a one on an autism spectrum diagnosis is needs support. If you've qualified for the diagnosis and you get a 1, 2, or a 3, a 1 still needs support. It's like everybody forgets that. So you want to remind them. You remind them it's an IEP, individual education plan. Best practice is to keep the services in place through transitions and then reevaluate. If you have not seen the program that they are doing and your child has not been in the program for 2 weeks, it's all speculation. That is a transition. You have a right to evaluate the program. Your child has a right to go into the program set up for success, not failure, which means you best practice is that you take everything that's been working into the new program and let the child with the supports see if it works, and then fade the supports. If they're doing anything else, that is not best practice. Okay, let's move on to the next one, and you're going to negotiate down. Now, this is for those of you who already have the IEP. So for the next couple of years, until your child is completely ready to exit their IEP, this is all you're going to be doing is negotiating down. So, of course, you do what Kohl's does. You know, Kohl's, the shopping, I'm going to get in trouble with Kohl's. Lovely, lovely store. But they have these massive sales, right? And everybody loves a sale, right? But you go in to buy something, and if you took the time to look, it's on sale for 50% off. But you, if you, and that's exciting. But you look it up online and you go, oh, the original price for it is substantially higher than if I bought it someplace else. So it's not really 50% off. It's like 20% off, but it's so much more exciting when you feel like you're getting 50% off. That's why you made that long, long list of all the things, the sun, the moon, and the stars, because some of them you're going to say, all right, I'm willing to give on this one. But it's one that you probably weren't going to get to begin with, right? But if you're negotiating from a place where you don't have much on your list, you're going to lose some things because that's how a negotiation works. So ask for as much as possible. Ask for more. And they're going to be like, we're trying to whittle you down and you're asking for more. Yes. Now let's negotiate, right? You want to talk about fading services with evaluations at every step. Nobody should ever be talking about just stopping anything. If you want to fade speech, if you want to fade OT, if you want to fade an aid, let's do that. But you're going to have one and then the next day not have one? Where is the science on that? It doesn't exist. So, for instance, you would go from a one-on-one aid to a one-on-one aid that at certain times during the day that we've all agreed that the child has been demonstrating that they're really okay during those periods of time, that the one-on-one aid isn't there or is working with other children. You can fade from a one-on-one aid to a two-to-one aid after success has been shown, right? But you're constantly reevaluating. They want to write it into the IEP that the aid is gone, and you want to write it into the IEP that the aid is there, but we're going to fade to see for success, right? You always want to try to keep one thing in the IEP so that you keep the IEP and you can always call an emergency IEP if something goes wrong. So always try to keep one service. to make it clear, on your IEP, there's a services page, right? There's a settings page of what setting your child is getting their services in. If they're talking about declassification, they should be fully in gen ed. If they're not fully in gen ed, it makes no sense to me, but I've seen it. So that's the settings page, right? And who's doing the teaching. But then there's the services page. If you keep just one service, you get to keep the IEP, because when you move to the 504, 504 no longer has services, right? So, you know, just a thing, try to keep one service so that you keep the IEP open. There's always room to go back in, call the emergency IEP, and your child has the full protections of IEP to add more services later on. But anyway, when there are no services at all, that is when you fade to the 504 plan. Go slower than molasses in January going uphill. Just my advice. Let's move on because we're running out of time here. When in doubt, ask to see their data. Schools are not good at data. It will trip them up. And if you can, I had the great fortune to be in a meeting. Somebody said this on a tour. I said, can I see your data? And she said, oh, we don't take data. It's like, she did not just say that, did she? But she did. And then I was talking to a lawyer, and they're like, oh, if you can get her to say that into the tape recorder in the IEP meeting. And I thought, I'll never get her to say it again. And I had the tape recorder there, and I said, you know, I've asked to see your data. And she said, yeah, and I told you, we don't take data. I was like, okay, I'd like to suspend the IEP meeting. And then I just sent that to the head of education, and we worked it all out. Because they can't say to you that they take no data, because then what are they basing it on, right? And when they show you their data, it's a mess. So asking for their data is a really good thing to do. It massively trips them up. Go ahead to the next slide. When appropriate, this is like dropping the F-bomb. You say to them, excuse me, but what you just said sounds very ableist, or what I'm hearing is ableism here. Now this is, talk about a powder keg, but this is the word, right? When you need it, you say it. And they will be engaged in that at some point if they're talking about taking away your child's classification. Ableism is discrimination or prejudice against individuals with disabilities. And if part of your child's diagnosis is communication deficit with a sensory component that is not visible to the school, and they are saying that your child doesn't have sensory issues, your child doesn't need OT, your child doesn't need speech, you can accuse them of ableism. I would say use this sparingly, because they're going to go, what? It's, you know, it's very incendiary. But when somebody says that, if you're, I have a parent who said to me that the school said, says regularly, we're not giving you OT services unless you have fine motor issues or some other kind of physical thing, nothing for sensory. Like, they just don't believe in sensory. Excuse me, that is the definition of ableism. You are assuming, because you do not have a sensory thing with the overhead lights, that my child doesn't, and you would be wrong. That is a very ableist point of view. I am asking you to consider the law around IDEA, and my child has a qualifying diagnosis. I don't know if you're aware of what the diagnosis of autism is. There is a sensory component, and you are denying that. My child does not have FAPE as a result, and they will shut that meeting down, and they will get a lawyer, but that's okay. That's okay, because they should get a lawyer, because the lawyer is going to go, you muffed up. So don't be afraid of that. But use this one sparingly. It's the F-bomb. Okay, let's go on. Don'ts. Don't give up. Don't let them think that you're wrong. This is a little bit of a chess game, and the law is on your side. Don't make yourself sick over it. Okay, let's go on to the do's. Do laugh and have a sense of humor about how ridiculous some of the things they are. I used to do a thing where I would write letters that I never intended sending to them, and then I ended up doing them in a one-woman comedy show that are hilarious now that I read back. The names that I called them, you can't do anything but laugh, because it's just so ridiculous, right? Do have a sense of humor about it, because it is ridiculous, and someday you'll look back on it and go, oh my gosh, what a bunch of buffoons. To try to take away your child's classification or try to deny them an IEP. It's just buffoonery. Do reward yourself for defending your child. It's so important that you have pride in that. and that you reinforce yourself for that. Do take care of yourself as you fight. Don't allow yourself to get sick. And do celebrate each and every victory. You win a little bit, you woohoo! Whatever is meaningful to you to celebrate. Now, do I have another slide, or is that the end of it, Chris? That's the end of it. So what I meant to put in there, though, is there's a very important Supreme Court case that really makes sure that this is in your favor. It's Andrew, E-N-D-R-E-W. But if you look up Supreme Court autism de minimis, right? You'll find it. It's Andrew, though, is the case. And this was a couple of years ago. And good morning, Susie. What was argued, and the original, it was a case that was overturned. The Supreme Court overturned it. And basically what it said and what the takeaway was is that in the free appropriate public education for autism, it could not be de minimis. That doing the bare minimum for the child was not enough. Now, we use this argument all the time when we have an impacted kiddo and they're not doing enough, but we also can use this argument when they're trying to take away and say that the child doesn't qualify. Because we can say, you're trying to force this child to be able to do everything that a child without that diagnosis could do, which is in effect de minimis. And so you can argue that as well. It's important that you do everything that you can right now, because I don't want to put too fine of a point on it, but the court that originally ruled not in favor of the Andrew case, the person who made that ruling now sits on the Supreme Court. So we don't know how long Andrew is going to stand until there's another case where there could be something that competes with Andrew, because lots of parents are winning with Andrew in court. We will see how that all plays out. But you do need to know that right now, all of the court findings are in your favor to argue that your child still has a right to a free, appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment because they have that qualifying diagnosis. You just want to go in and make sure that you're telling them all the needs that your child has and all the things that are impacting them that they may not be able to see. I'm going to hold hands with you and say, si se puede, because I know that you guys can do it. Please write us back and let us know what worked for you when you went in and argued, what things that you ran up against, what you found. When you go to the Parent Hub, what support they gave you. Let us know how this works. Last year, we did this about getting a one-on-one aide, and I just loved that we had so many parents write back and say, I went in, I fought for it, I did the steps, I got the aide. I think there was only one parent that didn't get the aide and ended up pulling out their kid to do homeschooling, and they've said that it's going so well. But the rest of them, everybody got an aide. So I'd love to know what the upshot of all this is for you guys. We're going to be back next week, and hopefully we're going to be doing 3 live shows for you next week because we're gearing up for April. Let's hope the health holds, you guys. I'm trying my best. But I'm sending you all a hug, saying thank you for being a participant, and please don't let the schools get away with this. All right, we'll see you next week. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now.
If you found anything helpful in this video, please give us a like. In fact, make sure that you smash that subscribe button on YouTube and give us a like on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Instagram for important updates. And please download our free podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much. See you next time.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.